you to just want to talk about a cult film that any football fan, I suppose, film fan and war film fan of a certain age will have fond memories of, a special place in their heart, as this cult classic.
I decided to join the team.
The American? No.
You use that bloody American style again here and you'll be fast.
Like, you play English, I play American.
Can you do with your mouth shut?
Hey, the mouth and the hands work together. It's a team.
This match is a propaganda stunt for the Germans. It's a wonderful opportunity for us.
Escape to Victory, of course, starring Pele, Michael Caine and Sylvester Stallone, and also a load of other actual footballers, many of whom played for Ipswich Town. It's from 1981. John Smith's a big fan of it. He's written a definitive history of the film called The Escape. Here he is telling me how far back his love for it goes.
Back to childhood, really. So I'm old enough to have grown up when VHS players were a new thing, sort of early 80s, and I remember the video shop landing in our local group of shops. And certainly not the first, but one of the first things we got out was Escape to Victory. I can just remember going round there and, looking up at one in wonder at all the different titles there. And suddenly there was this film in the middle of the shelf, and it had the guy who I knew as Rocky on it, Sylvester Stallone, because I would definitely have seen Rocky, and I recognised Michael Caine from one or two films I'd have seen at that point. And then in the middle of it was Pele. And you know, that immediately jumps out as what's going on here.
Just for somebody of sort of our vintage, and I don't know how old you are, but in 1981 when it came out, I was 14. So this was just like a war film with football in it, and actual proper footballers in it, not least one of the greatest footballers ever. You know, it's an extraordinary thing. I mean, how did the recruitment happen?
Well, I think it all hinges on Pele, really. I think there's a really small window in which this film would have been made. So obviously, the top line of it is The Great Escape with football, really, which would sell me on it, and no doubt many, many other people. But I think to make this film, it needed the American money, and I don't think Hollywood was falling over itself to make a film about football until Pele had been playing in America for a few years. And Pele at that stage, even though football wasn't the biggest game in America, obviously, Pele was as big a star as probably everybody apart from Muhammad Ali, maybe, at that point. So the fact that he'd had a few years of Pele playing in America had raised the profile enough that I think somebody somewhere thought, if we can get Pele, then, you know, we've got the makings of a film.
And was there somebody in Hollywood who said, look, we need plenty of Ipswich Town players in this?
Well, what they did, it seems to be, again, because there wasn't that knowledge, they seemed to recruit people to cover certain things. So they recruited a sports expert to direct it. And there's a guy called Peter Mason who was hired as the football expert. And then he was friends with Bobby Robson. So he made the approach to Bobby Robson, and it just seems very informal. The guys all remember, as I spoke to a lot of the players, most of the players for the book, and all the Ipswich guys just remember one day after training, this guy just being brought into the room, explaining a little bit about the film, who fancies coming to Hungary for a month or so to play football with Pele and be an extra in a film. And if you put your hand up, you got to go. Simple as that.
And it was all filmed in Hungary, wasn't it? Which must have been an adventure in itself. I mean, that was very firmly behind the Iron Curtain in 1980.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So they picked Budapest because, I think it was cheaper to film there. I think there were certain incentives to film there, and it made it a lot cheaper to film there than in Germany or France or anywhere else, or even England, I guess. But one of the big pulls was the stadium, the MTK stadium, looking old enough to pass for the Stade de Colombe in Paris, because it didn't have floodlights and it still had that old feel of a stadium that could have passed for the Paris one in the 40s. But yeah, Budapest, they all speak really highly of the time they had. They seem to have a lot of sort of per diems to spend, and there were a few grateful restaurants and bars.
And I expect your per diems went a long way. Exactly, you know, a dollar buy you a lot of things in Budapest back in the day. But see, it seems a shame to me when it's called a cult classic, which kind of implies it's great but not very good. But I don't know, I was just reading the plot, reminding myself today. I mean, it's obviously it's daft, it's a fantasy, but it's quite an involved plot with some brutality at its heart.
Yeah, it has. I mean, people forget the start of it. It opens with a failed escape attempt that ends with somebody being shot dead and tangled up in the wire, and then immediately kind of switches to this far lighter tone of the prisoners playing football, and the football very much takes the lead from then on. And then there's a point at which it does touch on darker themes when the players from Eastern Europe arrive, the Germans having sort of previously denied their existence, and Michael Caine's character Colby is allowed eventually the pick of some Eastern European players, and they arrive. But the film kind of makes the decision to stay on the lighter side of things. It stays as a romp. I think, you know, because one of the players who arrives in that group is Kazimierz Stainer, the Polish player who was playing for Man City at the time. And he goes on, and in the game, he scores a goal and he sets one up, and he has this absolutely storming game. And I think there's another world where that's the thread, that's the story. But the producers of Escape to Victory obviously decided to stay on the lighter side of things, and it's much more of a romp than
a lot of the discourse, if you can call it that, about the film. It revolves around identifying the actors, normally American actors, who can't play football, and then also the footballers in it who can't act. But turning that on its head, I mean, who were the footballers who could act? Because, you know, they weren't all unconvincing as actors, were they?
No, I think a few of them do well, and none of the guys speak of there being much of a casting process in terms of who got given the lines or not. They all arrive, apart from obviously Pelé and Bobby Moore knew they were turning up and had lines. They had a slightly more rounded part, but the others really just thought they were being extras, and then they turned up and suddenly they're given a script and it's like, learn this, you've got a scene with Michael Caine tomorrow. And I think they struck really lucky, because Russell Osman stands out as being particularly good, and Mike Summerbee, and Kevin O'Callaghan, because Osman and Summerbee get more lines than everybody else, and I think they do certainly as well as they need to. I think they're pretty good, and Kevin O'Callaghan obviously gives us the famous heartbreaking scene when he has to have his arm broken.
The players you've spoken to, they must have some fantastic stories about, I don't know, just being, I suppose, out on the lash with Pelé and Michael Caine in Budapest and so on. I mean, the crack must have been phenomenal.
Absolutely. I think that's what come across. I mean, like I say, it's my love letter to the film, and some of it is about my relationship to the film, but it's all really positive. Everybody I spoke to spoke so well about it. Everybody had a lovely time. A thing that kept coming up is that there was kind of a vibe in the camp that the footballers all wanted to be actors and the actors all wanted to be footballers. So everybody was kind of equally enamoured. You know, people like Tim Pigott-Smith who were in it, and Tim Pigott-Smith and Ozzy Ardiles became firm friends over the course of filming. During the downtime when they're not filming, they're playing chess together and having kickabouts. And then, as you say, in the evening, they're going home, they're getting changed, and they're out in a restaurant spending as much as they can spend in Budapest. And it just sounds like a lovely way to spend a month.
Have you got a favourite scene?
Have I got a favourite scene? I like it. I do like it when they come in at half-time. There's a bit... So obviously the first half's gone really badly. They go 4-0 down, and then Bobby Moore scores just before half time. Being a West Ham fan, obviously I've got a slight favouritism from Bobby Moore, and it's lovely that he scores that goal. But then the enthusiasm that Michael Caine has when he comes back in, and he's saying, "Oh, we scored a goal. Terry scored a goal," and you realise that that's because he thinks that's the end of it. That's kind of enough for him at that point. Not to give the game away too much, but at that point, he thinks that's it. He thinks they're getting out of there, and that goal is enough for him. And then obviously we know what unfolds after that. But yeah, I think the enthusiasm with which they burst back in at half time is lovely to see.
I mean, there's something unusual in it as well, and I suppose this is a spoiler, but blimey, it was released, 45 years ago, or whatever. But the match itself in the end ends 4-4.
Yes,
but it just, against all the odds and biased refereeing and terrible fouling by the Germans, obviously, but. You would have thought Hollywood would demand the last-minute winner somehow.
You would think. Well, in the early versions of the script and in the book of the film, like the novelisation of the film, which you think probably carried more of the original script in it, Hatch, Sylvester Stallone's character Hatch, does go upfield and score the winning goal. And they win it 5-4, and then the pandemonium ensues, and they get out from there. But once the footballers arrived on set, that was quickly pushed aside. There's some debate over which of the footballers had the most influence on it. But I think certainly Pelé and Bobby Moore, as soon as they looked at it and said, yeah, that's not...
Well, Sylvester Stallone can't dribble, basically.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen that a goalkeeper will dribble upfield and score the winning goal. And fair play to Sylvester Stallone. Because he would have accepted that script on that basis. And then all of a sudden that's taken away from him and he's got a penalty save instead. But, so the footballers managed to sort of temper that down and make that aspect of it at least a bit more realistic.
I mean, it has been said about films and other things that they're like sausages. You might enjoy them, but you wouldn't want to know how they're made. But it doesn't sound as though this has diminished anything for you with your love for this film.
No, not at all. If anything, it's enhanced it. Because, like I say, everybody... that I spoke, from my own research in terms of it, how it came together, that was all just interesting to me. And then everybody I spoke to just had a lovely time. Everybody just had a great time making this film. And I know that's not always a guarantee of quality. We've all seen certain films where you can tell that a cast has had more fun making it than we're having watching it. But I don't think that's the case with this. I just think it's an interesting cocktail of people and how it came together, and they clearly all had a great time making it.
And John Smith's book about Escape to Victory is just called Escape, and it's well worth a look. It's just gone 25 to 1.